Begin.
Please note that the following program includes adult themes and language. You're listening to the weekly show on Discourse.
Oh yeah, I'm back.
Oh yeah, we're all back. I'm Morgan Nickel, big mouth dickhead from the internet.
And I'm Dylan Reeve, fed.
Oh yeah, I've had like three little beer sticks and a little bit of cider, but I certainly have not had dinner. So this is going to be a strange blood sugar show, which is my favorite kind.
That's the best we can offer.
Yep. So I've had an idea for a new game. It's called Finish the Headline. Have I got a sting for something like Finish the Headline?
Poorly considered and unexpected segment.
That's as close as I can get. So Dylan, I would just like to play this with you before we introduce our guest, even though we have almost no time with our guest.
That's okay, I'm sure he'll wait forever.
Where is it? Oh, there we go, okay.
First we play Find the Headline.
Yep, so Finish the Headline, Dylan. Man thrown in air by huge...
trampoline.
It's not actually a fun game really, is it?
Rooster.
See, that would have been more like it.
Mistake.
Yes, this whole game was a mistake. Man thrown in air by huge electric shock. A man was thrown up to 3 meters when he suffered an electric shock at a wire wrapper milking shed this afternoon.
No, that's fine, but what about the girl who suffered an electric shock and fell face first into poo?
We can definitely talk about that in a minute, because we've got a guest on.
I'm not sure that story is relevant.
We've got
to
a guest,
but
on
let's
Discourse.
Go anyway.
So there's a story that we've been really carefully avoiding, and that is about the Roastbusters, because we are not very good at detail, nuance, and we are boys, and so you know, no one needs. No one really cares what we have to say about...
I'm also sure that both of us have got ourselves into assorted troubles discussing issues like these in the past. So we should just, you know...
So we should let someone who's an expert...
let someone who's less stupid than us.
Yeah, who's demonstrated that they are maybe a little bit more competent. So we're not talking to anyone directly about the Roastbusters, but in the wake of the whole Roastbusters scandal and the poor police coverage of that, a whole lot of people have got dirt on their faces. That kind of ties back to your story about the girl with the electric fence.
Okay.
So the police commissioner looked like a dickhead, and the police minister looked uninformed and a bit like a dickhead, and the Auckland police all kind of looked like dickheads. And then Willie Jackson and John Tamahere got a caller on their talkback show in the middle of last week. A girl called Amy, who had gone to school with a bunch of the victims of the so-called Roastbusters and knew the boys and had lots of personal information to share, and they were just really just dickheads.
They were John Tamahere and Willie Jackson.
They were John Tamahere, and that is not really a very good combination. There was an immediate outroar at this. It got a lot of coverage on Twitter. I mean, I would never normally listen to radio live, because why would you? It's for dickheads, obviously. I didn't think it would go any further than that. But our guest, Giovanni Tiso, who is a writer and translator and a troublemaking Wellingtonian, he decided that he would do something about it. He would go a little bit further. And so he spoke to the advertisers on the show. And it got quite some response, and everything developed from there. Are you there, Giovanni?
Yes, hi.
So you contacted the advertisers on the show, and what did you say to them?
Well, what I sent them an email. First of all, what I did is I recorded the Wednesday show to see who would advertise there the next day. And, of course, it was a little bit of an arbitrary list, because – what happens is these companies buy blocks of ads, but they don't actually decide where they go.
Yeah.
So whoever happened to be on the show the next day, first of all, I thought it was outrageous that they were on the air.
Yeah.
They obviously needed to be stood down.
Yeah.
and that weren't, and you know, Radio Live fudgedation and that before with a completely inadequate statement. Yeah. And so I thought I'd record it and take down the names of the advertisers and contact them. And what I told them was, first of all, how I felt about the interview.
Yeah.
And then I asked them three questions. I asked them, what did they think of the interview? What did they think of the apology that was made on the air the next day? And were they planning to continue to support the show?
Yeah.
And I really didn't think that very much would come of it at all.
So you didn't suggest that they don't advertise. You asked them if they were planning to continue advertising.
Implicitly, I suppose implicitly I did.
Yeah.
And I guess in my introduction, I thought, you know, I spelled out what I, you know, why I thought that there was unacceptable radio.
Yeah.
And that they should, why I didn't think that anyone should be associated with it.
Yeah.
But no, not directly. It was just the implication of the email. But it wasn't a persuasive email. I wasn't really trying to convince them of anything.
Mm.
Partly because I guess I cynically am generally of the view that you can't convince businesses to do anything other than their interests.
Yeah. So the first I knew of it was when you put up a Google Doc, a spreadsheet of the people that you'd contacted and the contact that you'd used and what their response was. And I was really amazed by how many people were looking at it. When I went in and logged in and looked at it, there must have been 40 anonymous users on at that moment, and the anonymous username on Google Docs it's got like an incrementing number, and it was a pretty high number. So there seems to have been a really pretty high degree of interest very quickly.
Yeah, well, what happened is the day before after the show was finished, I replayed it just forwarding to the ads because I'd recorded it. And so I it took me about an hour, I guess, to write down the names. And then I tweeted them. Yeah. I put out six tweets. And throughout the day, and I said that I would contact them as soon as I had gathered all the email addresses. So in the next few hours, I got so many requests for that list again.
Yeah.
And I kept saying, as soon as I got time, I'll create a Google Doc. And then I kept referring people to their tweets. So I think there was a bit of pre-existing interest in that list.
Yeah.
Because, of course, Radio Live wouldn't. I think a journalist tried to get it from Radio Live, but Radio Live wouldn't give it.
No, they would cite something like commercial sensitivity or something, right? Even though it is obviously publicly available to anyone who just wants to listen.
If someone had recorded the show, because at this stage, by now, they had also taken down the interview itself.
Yeah. So the day after the... they got their interview so wrong. Well, was it the day after or was it the day after that?
Yeah.
Willie,
Tuesday, yeah.
So Tuesday Willie or... and JT then issued an apology. And if they had actually gotten it right then, and I think a lot of people had told them what they'd gotten wrong, primarily victim blaming. They kept on doubling down on the stupidity of what they'd said, talking about how they thought it was reasonable for them to ask. Number one, what kind of clothes girls were wearing when they went out, whether it was appropriate for young girls to be drinking, and even whether this girl at 18, even whether she was a virgin when she had lost her virginity. And it was one of those terrible artificial speaking out one side of your mouth apologies that just, it made it really clear that they didn't understand what was going on. And then...
They spelled it out. They said, I'm so sorry, but in actual fact, I still don't know what was wrong with it. But they actually said it out loud.
Yeah. So then, of course, they had their weekly political hour with Matthew Hooton and what's that alliance chap?
Matt McCartan.
It's another show that, of course, this is more than I've listened to Radio Live in a long time. It's too bad it's for such a poor reason. Anyway, Hooton took them to task, and unfortunately, I don't think he used the simple language that the Radio Live listeners, and it turns out their hosts, needed. And it turned into, pretty quickly, a kind of a slanging match with Willie Jackson shouting at him to shut his mouth, and then telling him to get out, and then he stormed out. And then what proceeded to happen after that was Matt McCartan had a very gentle and fairly well-reasoned conversation with them where he actually explained to them what they had done wrong, and they still didn't understand. They still didn't get it. And they said that now, I guess it was while Hooten was still there. They said that he was trying to apply his, like, middle-class King's College values when Hooten had the audacity to suggest that 17-year-old boys, instead of raping 13- and 14-year-old girls, they should be helping them get to safety. And instead, the hosts said that that was not the way things were in, I don't know what kind of imaginary ghetto Willie and JT think that this all operated in. But these were actually, I think they're actually relatively wealthy families that these boys come from, these young
they're
men come
middle
from.
Pretty middle class.
Right. And so this argument was bizarre. It was incredibly unconvincing from Willie and JT. And it was uncomfortable listening to Hooten, just because I wanted him to be able to have the conversation with them, and he wasn't. Luckily, McCartan was a bit more level-headed, and so he was able to have the conversation. Did you listen to that whole thing as well, Giovanni?
No, I followed just the fallout. I just heard that he had left the show and, you know, stormed out.
So he had said...
I think it was Friday, though, wasn't it?
Yeah,
and
that might have been Friday.
At that stage, there had been... The boycott wasn't trying as well, so... Yeah.
So the boycott is the ball that you'd started rolling, where you had managed to get these. I think ultimately it was virtually all of the advertisers that you contacted.
I only got responses from about 10 out of 30.
Yeah.
But I think that the station got more replies than that.
Yeah. So the station said that they didn't say a lot of our advertisers have withdrawn their bookings with us, and it's embarrassing. What they instead said was that Willie and JT would be operating without advertising for like 2 weeks or something.
Yeah, I think until the end of this week.
Right. And but it's not going to get to the end of this week.
No.
Because the most glorious part of this whole thing is that Willie and JT, names that I find awkward. when you've got a cool surname like Tamahere, why would you just call yourself JT?
Tamahere is so hard to pronounce.
But it's such a cool name.
When I used to work on Radio Pacific, before it was Radio Live,
yeah,
we used to have a regular caller called Rawiri.
Yeah.
I couldn't pronounce that properly.
Rawiri. That seems all right. It's probably not correct, but it's probably close enough.
It's harder than Tamahere.
Yeah. I'm actually very conscious that I'm probably pronouncing Giovanni wrong.
You are.
Yeah. I don't
no,
know.
That's okay. I actually quite like it. It's got one more syllable in New Zealand than it does in Italy. But that's all right. I'm getting used to it. It's quite nice.
How should I say it?
Giovanni. It's not Gio, it's Gio.
Oh, okay.
But that's fine. Actually, people call me Gio. They just call me the beginning of it. And I like it.
Gio. Gio is pretty cool. It sounds like something from The Matrix.
It's actually something from a kids' TV show.
Is it?
Very good.
Is it like a dog that's made out of clay or something?
I can't remember right now. No, it's it doesn't really matter. I'll figure out what it is and I'll explain it all to you later.
So after so yesterday, Willie and JT, quote unquote, took a break for the rest of the year, and. The radio station, Radio Live, is saying that they may be back and it will be reviewed after, and they're going to spend the time discussing what happened. But, I mean, they were fired, right?
No, I mean, they weren't. I don't think they were fired, and I wouldn't be surprised if they are back.
If they rate, they'll be back, I guess.
Well, they fit the station.
Thugs, I mean, and morons, is that...
Well, yeah, maybe it is, but I mean, broadly speaking, they fit the station. You know, they have the right. I don't know. I can't even know how to describe it, but they fit talkback pretty well.
Yeah.
But I mean, clearly, you know, there are things that they are not able to talk about without stepping very deeply in shit.
Gio, do you think they should come back?
Yeah, I don't really have a position on that. I don't. You know, so long as, you know, someone has suggested in the last couple of days, and I think Linda Clark was one of them, that they're beyond redemption. They couldn't come back because they couldn't see, they still, at the end of all that, couldn't really see what was wrong with that segment.
Yeah.
And if that is the case, then yes, 15 they can't
minutes.
Come back.
Yeah. But, I mean, surely after this, they have to understand that they did make a mistake. This is not just a storm in a teacup. This is.
They'll understand they made a mistake, but I seriously can, even no matter what they say about it, I'm pretty certain they'll write it off, as many people would, as PC gone mad. You know, that as ridiculous as that expression is, I'm fairly certain that that's how they'll view it. They'll say, internally or externally, whichever it ends up being, probably internally, because externally they'll probably be contrite and say they've learned their lesson.
Yeah.
But internally, I'm fairly sure they'll write it off as PC gone mad and, you know, and them being punished for just straight talking. And it's due. I mean, there is an aspect of, you know, it's a really difficult thing to talk about in any way that isn't, I'm not sure how to say that, anyway, there isn't quite the mainstream.
Yeah.
You know, it's a minefield to walk around, but they walked through that minefield with great big clomping boots.
Yeah. So I don't think anyone should ever be considered beyond redemption. I mean, you know, short of killing a bunch of people, you know. I don't think anyone should be considered beyond redemption, but they have to demonstrate that they actually really have learned this lesson, not in a mealy-mouthed public relations spin way, but actually understand what rape culture is and how they contributed to it, and understand that the position that they have on that radio station in particular affords them an opportunity to really inform a lot of uninformed men who don't understand this issue and think that actually a drunk girl is prey, or think that a girl in a short skirt is asking for it, which is, you know, obviously the exact problem that they contributed to by asking those questions and suggesting thereby that they thought that they did contribute.
I hope that turns out to be the case. I hope they can figure it out, but I'm not sure that they will, and I'm not sure how they can honestly demonstrate that.
No.
But we'll see.
Yeah, having no personal knowledge of them or I really can't take a position on that.
Let's not forget that Tamahere was also the guy that spoke about the front bums in the Labour Party, right? I mean, so he has a history of misogyny, a deep-rooted misogyny. He also has, I understand, a history of being a drunk. He has, I believe, 3 drink-driving convictions, all right? That's more than anyone I know. I don't think I know anyone who even has 1. And he has 3 drink driving convictions. And then he has the audacity to question girls about how much they've been drinking. Their drinking is not the problem.
They weren't driving.
They weren't driving. They were just.
It's interesting that the whole thing's interesting. I do wonder if it would have turned out the same had the advertising thing not happened. Because there was still quite, even with that, the advertising.
No, they would have toughed it out. They would have toughed
media
it out.
Attention.
Well, something that I've been wondering, and I was just wondering about it tonight, is if this has anything to do with the fact that they podcast the segment.
Yeah.
And I wondered if they were, I'm not saying it was premeditated.
Yeah.
But it was orchestrated in any way, because they didn't know that Amy was going to call. But I wonder if after it happened, they thought, okay, we can actually get a little bit of shock jock mileage out of this.
Yeah.
And I'm not talking about that in particular, but I'm talking about the station.
Yeah.
So they put it up, and it was isolated, and people could. I don't listen to the program. It's because Russell Brown heard it and was extremely upset by it, which is not, you know, he's not quick to that kind of reaction.
Yeah.
That I thought, well, actually, maybe I need to listen to this, and we all do need to listen to this. But I mean, Sean Plunkett had a pretty abusive interview in the morning with a rape survivor, and Andrew Fagan the next night had one as well. So, but they weren't. They didn't get the same kind of. They weren't highlighted by the station.
Yeah. Right?
So they got a little bit lost in the mix a little bit. Yeah.
They certainly. I mean, they'll certainly know where their hot button bits are when they happen. They'll realize what the you know what.
But I'm not blaming them for it. I think you know, this could be the station, and I wonder if Radio Live has a problem that goes well beyond Jackson, Tamahere, Plunkett, and Fagan.
Yeah.
I wonder if. It's a broader issue.
Yeah. So Andrew Fagan blamed his wife. which I think is hilarious. And I see an article about Sean Plunkett, dickhead Sean Plunkett, but I don't really know anything about what happened in that instance.
Yeah, it's an interview that someone sent me the link last night, and I absolutely didn't have time to listen to it. Again, because it wasn't just the segment, it was that 15 minutes between 11:45 and 12 on the Tuesday morning. And so I actually needed to find a bit.
Yeah.
And I was just so busy that I couldn't do it. And so I listened to it tonight after Amy Maas from Fairfax put an article out about it. And then some people circulated the article. And because someone had given me the link last night, which was from the MediaWorks website,
yeah,
I posted the link on Twitter. And then I started recording the segment at the same time.
Right.
And within 14 minutes, MediaWorks took it down.
Right.
So I actually don't have the end of there, but it doesn't matter because it's after the interview.
Right.
So a little bit dodgy. I wonder if they were. Seems a strange coincidence.
So from Stuff, they say a sexual abuse victim has criticized Radio Live host Sean Plunkett for calling her a moron during an on-air segment. The woman, identified only as Carol, called Plunkett's show on Tuesday last week when she was cut off and told her story was fabricated. During her short call, Carol told Plunkett how she had been sexually abused and explained that without having counselling available to her, it had damaged her self-worth. She told him some of the details, and then he called her a moron and cut her off.
Yeah, he said to her that she was either making up the story or after cutting her off. So first of all, he cut the line, he cut her mic.
Yeah.
Then he said, I can't believe the story. It's either a fabrication or you're a moron for putting your daughter in that situation. So he was blaming her for her daughter being abused, sexually abused by her stepfather.
Right.
Yeah, it's...
It was horrible. It was absolutely horrid. But it didn't get the visibility that it might have got otherwise, because again, they didn't highlight it on the website. There wasn't a nice page with it that you could just click on and listen just to those 3 minutes.
It'll be different because with the John and with the JT and Willie bit, they will have known that was, you know, a highlight of their show when it was happening. With that other piece, it probably kind of passed without much comment. I haven't heard it, but I suspect it largely passed without much comment, as many, you know, like if you listen to any decent amount of talkback, there's a lot of that calling up and being dismissed.
I think what was really upsetting last week was the fact that it was happening last week.
Yeah.
I mean, these things are very bad in themselves. But of all times when to be saying those things, last week was absolutely the worst possible time.
Yeah.
Because everyone was on edge, everyone was upset, everyone was on heightened alert, which I guess is why we got the results, you know, what the outcomes were. What happened?
So I think these doofuses all have to go, and they need to be replaced by someone else with a big mouth but who understands some of these issues and is totally putting his hand up and is prepared to take over, I don't know, let's say 6 hours of airtime a day. I can do that.
What about some women instead?
Hey, women, even better. I mean, we are talking about a whole bunch of men here who are obviously, they've got some problematic ideas. They've got some old-fashioned ideas, and they do have... I believe they have pretty large audiences, you know, relatively speaking.
What about Marama Davidson instead of these two guys in the afternoon?
Yeah, I'm not sure she'll take the job.
No, but they could ask it.
Yeah, there's a whole.
But
lot
what I'm
of
suggesting is that there might be issues that are beyond the people you can replace.
Yeah.
Well, I think there's the issue, you know, like Fox News, for example, or whatever, that Radio Live is largely playing to its audience. So whoever they employ is going to be people that in one way or another kind of reflect their audience.
We need some Trojan horses, people who appear to reflect the audience, but actually...
Well, I mean, there certainly are people like that, and some of them even turn up on Radio Live occasionally. Mm. But, you know, someone you and I both know does fill-in hosting on Radio Live, and I'm sure presents a different impression on these things when he's on, but I don't think he's on that often.
Who's that, Giles or Damien?
Yeah, Giles.
Right, okay. Yeah, that's probably right. So last thing, Giovanni, I think we've kept you already for longer than you had to spare. In speaking to you and arranging the time for you to come on, it is very clear that there has been an overwhelming amount of media coverage and I guess, you know, a lot of contacts and requests for comment and interviews from you. How exhausting has that been?
It's actually been really exhausting, particularly, you know, if you're not used to it. Your concentration here to put in these things is actually quite,
Actually,
well, you know about this because you're in the business, but if you're not.
I'm not in the business. I'm a
Well, in the business of whatever it is that we're doing.
Yeah. So actually, it's just, this reminds
me
of...
in the business for an hour a week.
Of one thing that I noticed today, and that was this guy from Radio Wātea. And so that was, so Radio Wātea is operated by whatever this trust is that Tamahere is like.
The Waparera Trust and by the Manukau Urban Authority.
So
it's owned 50-50 by those two organizations, of which Jackson is the CEO of one and Tamahere is the CEO of the other.
Right. So that was an ambush, right? He was trying to get you on the air so that he could ambush you somehow.
Yes, I think so. He put a comment out on... I wrote a piece on Overland last week, which wasn't, anyway, whatever it was. But he put a comment out there essentially accusing me of racism, completely misrepresenting the views of, you know, completely fudging what Tamahere and Jackson had said, whilst there was a transcription just in the same web page that he was posting on. So it wasn't particularly clever either. I didn't take issue. It was like, there was like 8 sentences that were going in 8 different directions. So I didn't take issue with it necessarily, but I registered the name because as a moderator of my posts on the site, I get the email address. So he emailed me this morning saying, oh, would you like to come on at 8:30 tonight on Wild Hair Radio? And I recognized the email.
Right.
So I knew what he was going to ask me already in the interview.
Are you racist?
Well, and then so I said to him, I replied to him, I said, well, Are you perchance the same Keith Stewart who wrote that comment, the fairly unhinged comment on Overland? And then is Wātea Radio the same radio that is owned by, you know, or is rather that is, you know, whose bosses are Tamahere and Jackson? And if so, shouldn't you have mentioned these things? And he said to me, his reply, among many other things, finished with the phrase, yes, you know, I am, you know, I work for that radio of which they're the bosses. But I could also say to you that you come from the country that had fascism. So I think that's how the interview was going to go. And then we had a series of email exchanges, which didn't become more enlightened with each passing email. And I thought against going on the show.
Maybe had fascism, but also had the Renaissance.
Yeah, look, you know, you want to own up to your things, and, you know, it's important to talk about fascism. And we still have a lot of fascism today. It's not just an historical phenomenon, but I think it was a pretty long bow to draw.
Italy has a really weird relationship with democracy. I mean, wasn't there a period recently when they had, when they'd had like 20 governments in about as many years? I mean, but that's completely irrelevant. What a, I mean,
let's do 45 minutes on this. No, it's a common misconception that because we had lots of governments, we had a, you know, lots of different people governing. Actually, they were always the same for about 50 years.
Right.
They were always the same government, essentially. It was the Christian Democrats were in power uninterruptedly from 1948 to 1992.
Right.
But there were a lot of shuffles.
Right.
So it was a very stable and at the same time unstable government.
Right.
We'll get you and our local Italian gelato maker to come and tell us all about Italian politics.
Very good.
I can imagine that would be a hell of a show.
I am baffled by what. So now I don't know that I've read everything that you've written about this, but I don't understand what could be interpreted as racist. That just seems absolutely bizarre and baffling to me.
Well, the issue, I think, and it's a pretty pertinent issue, is why did Jackson and Tamahere get singled out when, you know, why did I, you know, I can put it on myself. Why did I go after them and not after Fagan and Plunkett?
Yeah.
And my answer to that would be that I didn't know about Plunkett until last night.
Yeah.
And Fagan came later. I can also, I think, having heard all the segments, I can also say that what Jackson and Tamahere did was particularly vile.
Yeah.
Was really kind of a different level.
Yeah.
And they didn't apologize. Yeah. Although, you know, Fagan and Plunkett took their time.
Yeah.
Although, but I think the fact that it was, I don't know, there was something about that segment that was so, I think Daniel McLaughlin described it quite well. It was so calm and repeated.
Yeah.
There was something that just, it was just very, very upsetting in a way that it was quite new to my ears, if you like. So something could be said of the fact that they were, they're off the air and other guys aren't.
Yeah.
And you could latch on to that.
The comment from Keith Stewart also says, he said at the beginning, the police stuff up completely, they fail to act, lie about their behaviour, and you target two talkback hosts. Why? Because they are left-wing or because they are Māori? So clearly, as a right-wing fascist Italian.
I've said things against the police as well. The problem is that I can't phone the advertisers of the police.
No, they don't have very many advertisers.
So, as much as I am not greatly in favour of consumer boycotts as a political instrument, sometimes it's just what you can do, and so you do it.
Well, I mean, also
you can't do it at all things.
There was no boycott. I mean, that's the thing. As I hate boycotts. They're kind of, they're sort of futile, I think, in most respects. But you actually really directly went to the advertisers and achieved a result that way, which I think is far better than...
It was an advertising box, so it wasn't a consumer box, so it didn't give more power to people with more money. Nonetheless, it was something that I wouldn't want to apply to all circumstances, for sure.
Yeah.
I think you did well. And, of course, the police aspect of it is being, was clearly being focused on by many people. It's not like they needed your voice in that situation.
Yeah, I mean, the tactic can be to isolate what you're doing and find fault in what you're doing, but not actually looking at what other people are doing. I don't need to do other things because other people are doing other things.
Yeah, I also hate the idea, it happens at all sorts of levels, that because one thing is worse than this other thing, we shouldn't bother about the other thing. Mm. We should only bother about the worst thing.
There is a comment in the Overland Post that I got, though, that I think is something we should think about. And that is, the question was, do left-wing lobbyists complain as loudly and mobilize as strongly against anti-Maori speech as they do against misogynist speech? And my answer to that would be that we do.
Yeah.
But the problem is that in society, then pushes back, because I think anti-Maori sentiment in society is stronger than misogynist sentiment at the moment.
Well, it's a lot easier to brush that stuff off. It's a lot harder to brush off, you know, once you start framing something as being rape positive, you can't really defend that. You can kind of defend, you know, a little bit of mild racism.
Look at Bob Jones. People do all the time.
Oh no, of course, and you can come up with you know, some mild. I think the racism towards Māori, especially, is a lot easier to kind of, shake our heads at and move on. Whereas obviously the rape thing is significantly.
No, definitely not.
But I think from a cultural perspective and from a, you know, a yeah, from a cultural perspective, we can, whether we should or not, or we shouldn't, but we can move past that a lot easier than we can, you know, sort of, this stuff is, we can all agree is wrong. Well, most of us can agree it's wrong.
Yes, but then you have to look at why do we, all of us can agree that one thing that is wrong, and another thing that is just as wrong. Oh, you know, if you think of the Paul Holmes column in the Herald, I don't know that it's qualitatively worse than what, better than what Jackson and Tamihere did, in the sense that it was passed by an editor. Yeah. It was published in a newspaper.
That was pre-screened.
That was absolutely outrageous. Yeah. But even though a lot of us mobilized against that, there were also a lot of people who said, Paul Holmes is right. And I know some of them. And you couldn't shame them. You couldn't argue with them. You couldn't counter them in the same way that you can this stuff. And that is something we need to talk about, I think.
Yeah. All right, but probably not tonight, because I think we've taken up all of your time that we can. We promised you 15 minutes, and then we stole 35.
That's all on me.
If you've still got 2 minutes to spare us, though, Dylan, I don't suppose you've got an Urban Dictionary word that is sensible.
Well, sensible. I've got an Urban Dictionary word of the week. Would you like to? We just go with it.
Urban Dictionary. Word of the week.
Urban Dictionary, word of the week.
So, Gio, So this is a game that we play sometimes off and on, sometimes off for a long time when we get it wrong. We take a word from the Urban Dictionary website, and we have to guess what the definition is.
Okay.
So Dylan, I will. Well, let's see what the word is, and look, I might go first. But
it's borderline. I mean, it's not terrible. But we're gonna go with the word is rage boner.
Rage boner. Well, rage boner is really, I mean, this is easy. This is when you are excited. I'm sorry, I'm going first. Even though you're the guest here, Gio, I'm going first. Because I'm so excited about this. I've got a definition boner right now.
I'll look that one up after this.
I'm sure it's in there. This is when people are just, they're really excited about confrontation and they're really into hating on someone. This is people who really drink the haterade after a good game of rage ball, and they get a rage boner while they're doing it. That's what it is. So, Gio, what's your guess?
Yeah, I think it's hard to argue with that one. Yeah, I think you got it.
Yeah, it's pretty much it. It's basically hating something so much you want to have sex with it.
We've got a winner.
Oh yeah! Thank you very much, Gio, for joining us. And I'm sorry we took so much of your time.
Thank you, guys.
All right, now we've got a lot of other stories that we can talk about in the next.
I'll start.
Yes.
NZ Twitter Secret Santa.
NZ Twitter Secret Santa. So I've never done Secret Santa before. Tell me about NZ Twitter Secret Santa.
Do you want to know the history or what it is now? Where do you want to start?
Yes.
Okay. Chat named Web Sam. I don't know, Sam something. At Web Sam on Twitter. Like 3 years ago, started doing it. He had people contact him on Twitter and sign up to his Web Secret Santa, his Twitter Secret Santa thing, and they would be given the name of some other random Twitter person, and then they'd have to find and choose a present for that random Twitter stranger.
So you'd be meant to go and look through their tweet stream. Still call it that? I don't even know what we call it anymore.
The Twitter blah.
Your Twitter fall.
Yep, you have to go and look through their Twitter feed and see if there's any interesting hints about what they might like. Maybe there's some sort of, you know, maybe they mentioned camping. Maybe they're going camping for Christmas and you can send them a stupid camping thing.
That only cost $5 or less or something.
Yeah, but $10 is our target.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway,
so if you have to go and look at...
buy a present for someone, send it off randomly hoping, and then someone sends you a present and everyone's happy because they get stuff.
So if you're randomly assigned a Twitterer, surely that means that sometimes you could get a Twitterer who has set their Twitter fall to private.
That was a problem. I think this year, so anyway, that happened for a few years. There was, of course, some various problems. One, of course, is the non-reciprocation issue, where either out of malice or just, you know, like so many of us are a bit shit at actually getting things done, you didn't get a present despite having sent one. That was always a bit sad. Yeah. Did happen. And of course the other issue was, it happened occasionally that you'd, in fact this happened to me one year, it was very annoying. I got assigned someone who had a private profile, and of course you don't want to out yourself as their secret sender, so you can't like try and follow them if you have no reason to do so. So then, you know, it's very tricky. And then I also got another year, I got someone who barely tweeted anything, and I was like, well, this is stupid, so I gave them some dumb thing. Anyway, this year Twitter Secret Santa, Sam, Web Sam, at Web Sam, was a little bit overrun, didn't think he could do it this year, so he put out a call, I don't know, like in, say, August or July, something like that, saying, hey, is anyone, you know, any New Zealand company or any person, you know, willing to take over Secret Santa for this year, because I can't do it. And NZ Post stepped up.
Wow.
I know.
Well, they've got all those posties who aren't doing anything, right?
Yeah, basically, so you can send them out to buy stuff for you.
Yeah.
Oh, they're doing stuff. They're delivering Trade Me packages.
The NZ Post Elves.
Yes, the NZ Post Elves. So they've stepped up. They're doing it. And the deal is now you sign up, you link your Twitter account to your NZ Post account that you either have or you're going to create.
Yeah.
And then on the 25th of November, so you have until about the 25th of November. Sorry, no, registration closes on the 20th of November. So hurry up. Get your registration signed up.
Yeah.
You have about a week. Registration closes on the 20th of November. On the 25th of November, you get assigned your Twitter Secret Santa, and they get given your Santee, no, your Santa, I guess you're the giftee. Anyway, they get given a special address to send it to that's not your address. It's a magical NZ Post address.
I don't know what it'll be. So there's a little bit more privacy for those people who maybe are.
Yeah, so it'll be like, my address will be like at Dylan Reeve at NZ, at Twitter North Pole Wellington or something stupid.
How many packages will they deliver to that address before it starts getting suspicious? Because I want to use a crazy address forever and ever.
They're only going to use it once. Anyway, so anyway, all your packages get sent in by the 11th of December. Then they get stored at the central place and sorted out and sent redistributed out to the people who should receive them.
Yeah.
If you do not send a present, you do not get a present.
So where does that go then?
Presents that were destined to you, if you don't send them, they end up with the, I want to say, Wellington City Mission.
Right. That's much better.
That is much better. And I think you also have to have a public Twitter profile. I think if you've got a private Twitter profile, you do not get to participate, or you have to be public first. I'm not sure.
I think there should be some shaming as well that goes along with that.
Well, I mean, it can always, you know, my one didn't arrive last year because the courier went missing. I couriered it and it never was received, despite the fact the courier said they delivered it.
Yeah, so. Right. We've heard this story before. I seem to recall Some Zoom wall that never quite made it to its destination.
Well, anyway, this was.
Moving right along. Let's not talk about that.
Let's not. I still have a bottle because I bought two. And anyway.
Oh yeah, is that right?
I'll find. Well, that happened. But anyway, for one reason or another, stuff doesn't arrive. If you don't send a present, or if your present is lost in the post, then the present that was destined for you will end up at the Wellington City Mission.
Yep. That's cool. I really like the sound of that. I'm probably not going to do it, though.
NZSecretSanta.co.nz, I think.
NZ. I better add this so I actually get it into the show notes. NZSecretSanta.co.nz.
And you must have a Twitter account.
Right.
And you should probably post things on your Twitter so anyone who receives you as their giftee can figure out, hopefully, what you might like. If you just register a Twitter account so you can receive a gift, you're going to get a shitty gift.
Right. Yeah, so I'd find this thing kind of a little bit stressful because I try to give thoughtful gifts. Now, the last couple of years, not very thoughtful. I've just ended up making a whole lot of fudge and giving that to people. In some ways, that's thoughtful. In other ways, it's just fudge. But when I'm
never
actually...
say just fudge. It's more than that.
Yeah, sometimes it's much more than that. Oh, golly. Sometimes my fudge is very good. Usually it's a little bit hard, though.
Everyone has a different idea about how they like their fudge.
Yeah. Some people like it a bit too soft. So I don't know what I would send a person like this. I think I'd spend too much time and I'd probably spend too much money as well. Like, I'd send them a fucking iPad or something stupid like that.
Well, of course, that's the thing that happens, that often, like, bigger companies get involved as well, you know, like Telecom signs up and people like that, and they'll obviously bust the $10 rule. You know, if you get Telecom as your secret Santa, you'll probably get a new phone or something, which is fine. It's cool.
So
the draw and all that.
So the chat room that has a certain amount of inside information tonight just asked if I gave a certain friend of mine a giant picture of my face. And that is actually correct. I did give a friend of mine a picture of my face, but it wasn't for Christmas. It was for her birthday. And it was cool. Anyway, nzsecretsanta.co.nz. It's surprisingly inexpensive. What? Other things that are surprisingly inexpensive? I don't know. But the New Zealand public transport in Auckland for buses. What?
Oh, no, New Zealand public transport in Christchurch is surprisingly inexpensive if you want to get, you know, creative.
We've got to get old, what's his name, Mickey Six Eye on from Snapper, because there are a lot, and maybe someone from Auckland Transport, maybe 1,700 people from Auckland Transport. They've got a lot of questions to answer. All of those people, a lot of answering is due, because what is going on? What's going on? So there's everywhere in the world almost, you know, you can use a card to get onto a train and maybe onto a bus, and then you swipe in and you swipe out And of course, we've got that here in Auckland, but they've managed to fuck it up, and they've already had to swap cards once.
Well, because of course, now, so in, what is it, in Wellington, NZ Bus or whoever they are, whatever they, Infratel, maybe,
yeah,
they own Snapper.
Yeah.
45
And
minutes.
So Snapper works in Wellington on all the buses.
Yeah.
And then there was this plan to do it in Auckland, and Snapper didn't win the contract.
Yeah.
But because it was taking so long, NZ Bus was like, well, fuck it, we'll just put our Snapper things on buses anyway, and then when the new system's rolled out, we'll, you know, kind of coexist.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's happened.
And it was such a mess. Well, it had started to happen, and I understand. I think that the people that actually won the contract is a company called Thales, who I think are French. And I understand that their system on the buses that it is actually available on now are faster and have more features. So they tell you how much you owe, what a balance you have on your card. So the old one would just say, ding, and let you in, or ding, whatever. And sometimes it would say, check your balance. Right, but that doesn't tell you how much you've got. Does that mean you've got 10 cents and you won't be able to get home, or does it mean you've got $4 or $5 and you can actually still do two more trips and so you're fine? And also, you had to go and top up by going to a friggin' dairy or, you know, one of these specific places you could top up your Snapper card. And now with the new one, the At Hop ones, which are a slightly more attractive card as well, you can do it online. Of course you can do it online. Why couldn't you do it online before?
You can do Snapper online, can't you?
I don't think so. Maybe you can, but it's a pain to set it up. I don't know. Anyway, all I know is that the new one, you definitely can. Anyway, the new one's nicer. The new one's nicer. But it sucks that it's a foreign company that has the contract. I find it annoying. It bothers me. Especially when, you know, Wellington seems to do this all right. Maybe their standards are just lower. You know, maybe they settled for something that, you know, wasn't perhaps the most wonderful technology. I don't even know. But, I mean, how many ways are there to have a... I mean, I presume it's just some sort of like ARFID in a
have you seen
goddamn
the,
credit card.
There it is. Have you seen the KiwiCon talk, the Christchurch one?
No.
Yeah, there was a talk at KiwiCon. Amon Ra did a talk about the Christchurch system, which I forget the name of immediately.
Yeah.
It works fine. But it's also delightfully insecure if you are willing to spend a little bit of time and effort into actually cracking it. You can put arbitrary amounts of money on it. You can the best one was you can activate your Metro card. You can activate your Metro card online, right? So it's got like a 6-digit number on the back of the card, and when you go online, you put in the 6-digit number and you enter an email address, and then you're associated with that card. But there's no verification that you actually have that card, so you can just enter any number you want.
Yeah.
If the card hasn't already been registered, it will be registered to you.
Right.
Not that it matters because you don't physically have the card. But once you register the card, you can see and change the details of the person who owns the card. And when you have to buy a Metro card, you have to give your name and address and date of birth.
Right.
So you can just go randomly putting numbers in and registering random cards and getting random people's names, address, and date of birth.
Right.
And also their... some other stuff as well. And if you want to get really advanced and you get certain RFID hacking technology, you can then also program cards and clone theirs and mess with it and do all sorts of stupid things.
So that kind of cloning stuff, that is not just Christchurch. I mean, we've heard about that in other places as well, where people, you know, sneak an antenna up to someone's back pocket and they get the code out of their wallet and then they can use that, write it to a blank and go on and use it.
Yeah, although there's that whole thing about writing it to the blank, and there's encryption, and then there's lots of ways that these things can be made more secure.
So I think, number one, you shouldn't store a balance on the card. There's no really compelling reason to do that.
No, absolutely not.
Let me finish. So you might say, what if you get on the bus and you actually have a zero balance? And the bus can't look it up because it hasn't got an internet connection. Well, so maybe you can get one day's worth of free travel. Just update the fucking database every night. All you need is a UID on the card, and that's all you bloody need.
Yeah, I guess so. And that's broadly speaking how lots of software licensing works, with distribute a key file that goes along with the software that lists every single UID of every single dongle.
So the chat room says that that Metro synced every few hours. And I just
It synced from the readers to the server. So if you went onto the card, onto the bus, if you checked onto a bus with a card that had a fake balance on it, like you'd cheated the balance to be $167,000 or whatever it was.
No way.
Then that syncs up to the server.
Are you kidding me? Who thought that was a good idea?
It's a great thing. You can watch it at SC Magazine.
That doesn't make any sense.
If you go to SC Magazine, if you look up SC Magazine on YouTube, you'll probably find the link.
Why the shit would you do it that way?
Because you make a lot of assumptions about security and about what people can and can't
That's
do.
That's so
and about
backwards.
How willing people are and are not to exploit your security.
But That's why exactly would you do you it that do way it. Around?
Well, there's probably very pragmatic reasons for doing it that way. For example, you can top up on the bus, so you can give the bus driver a $20 note and you can top up your thing. So therefore, the bus now knows how much, you know, the computer on the bus now has a different balance to what the server has and has to have a way of, but yeah, there certainly should be some.
But that's
some
not a balance that it read off the card. It's a balance that it has just set itself by having cash put in it.
One thinks there could be better ways of doing this.
This is stupid. I could design a better system, and I've never done anything like that before. Now, my system would be vulnerable to cloning, but only for one day, or maybe hours.
I'm sure your system would have many other issues.
No.
Okay.
My system would be flawless because it would be written in cold fusion.
And no one would bother to figure out how the fuck that worked to crack it.
So, good news this week.
Good.
Shark finning banned.
Yay.
So, I think we were something like country number 100 to do this, and I am upset about that, not crying about it, but New Zealand should be taking a leadership position on issues like this, where it's just so obviously wasteful and unsustainable.
All right, on the plus side,
yes,
there was no argument. It just happened. There was no argument about it at all.
But it should have happened years ago. We should have been country number one, maybe two, maybe three, but not 100. That is nuts.
Yep, no, you clearly don't, the issue, clearly you the don't issue just, is just that it took a while to get done.
And this kind of thing, where it's so simple and obvious, it shouldn't take a while. It should be faster. The Greens, Gareth has been talking about this on Twitter for, I think, at least a couple of years. And I should have heard about this. And before, our parliament said, hey, by the way, this thing that you probably haven't heard of because it is so fucking disgusting, we've banned it in our waters because it is so obviously awful. Yeah, anyway. Oh, I've just found a story that I wanted to mention from, it's actually from a couple of weeks ago, and I've just spotted it in the show notes. Woman who imported, this is actually a story from June. Somehow, don't even ask me how that is possible. Woman, but it doesn't matter what the story is. Woman who imported 2 kgs of party drugs seeks to avoid jail. Now, I want to talk to you about the
person who breaks law seeks to avoid jail.
Okay, but we call them party drugs.
Okay, what are the drugs?
Party drugs. We don't call them rampage drugs.
Oh, I see.
Right? We know that these are just for having a good time. They're called party drugs. It's like ecstasy. It's called loving feeling, loving, you know, like just niceness. Hey, would you like to have a puff of niceness, Dylan?
No, not particularly.
It's not called violence make you cut your face off drugs. It's party drugs. I mean, the clue is right there in the name. Anyway.
It is interesting. I'm not sure. Are there any countries that take an entirely neutral view on drugs and actually look at them for their effects rather than...
Well, Portugal's got some interesting stuff going on. They decriminalised everything and decided to invest, I think, in like healthcare and treatment more than.
Well, that's good, but I mean, there are certainly some drugs that are, you know, kind of objectively bad.
Well, it turns out that's not true. No, it turns out that's not true. So we've spoken about this before, and in the past, I've actually agreed about this, like heroin and pee and so on.
Well, I wouldn't have even put heroin in the
But I've before. Since we last spoke about this, I've read about this study that was done over, I think, actually a decades-long period, starting in like the 1960s or something. And they studied rats. And so for a long time, of course, we've used rats as an analog for people in many studies, and other animals, of course, unfortunately. So what they did was that they gave these rats heroin or some kind of opioid-laced water supply. And they discovered in their study that these rats, they would consume this heroin and they would keep consuming it until they died. They would drink this stuff at the expense of everything else in their life, right? So that's pretty much what we all have taken to understand from junkies and heroin users, right? They this takes over everything and no one is immune to it. Once you touch the stuff, you're fucked, right? That's pretty much what we understand.
Sure.
So this group did another study. So they had this group of rats in these little boxes with this heroin water. They also then created this thing, I think that they called something like Rat Town, which was like this open space, but, you know, obviously with walls, where they had a bunch of rats in there and they were able to contact each other. And they had like straw and sawdust and they had this heroin water. And guess how many rats consumed the heroin water if they had any kind of happiness in their lives? Almost none of them. And the ones that did just would have a little bit. So basically, they did these studies.
To give heroin addicts straw and sawdust.
Well, yes, but for human heroin addicts, straw and sawdust is hope and a future and a community.
Well, straw and sawdust are a lot easier to provide.
They are easier to provide, and that's why the simple answer is lock these motherfuckers up in little cages. That'll fix everything.
With no heroin water.
With no heroin water. Anyway, of course...
I was talking more about drugs like, what are they called? Bath salts. I don't know what they're really called. Things that actually have often very bad... psychoactive, I suppose.
Yeah.
Responses in people.
So the worst one,
I can't yeah. really fault ecstasy. There are some health issues to do with, you know, hydration and
certainly. Like that. Yeah, yeah. I mean, several people have died even in New Zealand sure. after taking ecstasy. But and as you alluded to, it's because they drank too much and they fucked up their brain. And they
marijuana. I can't. You know.
Marijuana is quite bad for some people, I think. People who were predisposed to schizophrenia, it can be triggered. And so it's something that's got to be avoided in younger people. That's definitely true. But for the majority of the population, marijuana is not really going to be a problem. It's definitely not addictive.
Yeah. Like those things, I can't see a purpose in outlawing them. It would be interesting to see what drug law would look like if it was... If every drug were evaluated from a neutral perspective, you know.
Yeah, starting from nothing.
I mean, it doesn't necessarily have to have a positive benefit. The positive benefit can just be, you know, like alcohol, for example, which is the positive benefit really is just kind of, it's a bit fun.
Yeah.
It's a bit, you know, changes your mental state a wee bit.
And everything.
Being I grab a samurai sword and chop someone's hand off.
Yeah.
You know, that's the negative side. The positive side, as long as it doesn't drift into the negative, is outlawing it really?
That's right. But some say now that problem that has happened with the P and the meth overseas, crystal and all the other names it's known by, is actually because of sleep deprivation, and it's not actually because of the drug itself, which is just speed. It's just methamphetamine, right? It's just amphetamines, which have been around for a long time.
Well, I think that probably it's also partly to do with other impurities in the drugs, I imagine.
That's possibly true. And so if you have...
We call it P here as pure, but it certainly fucking isn't.
No, not necessarily. It's not blue, is it? It's not that pure.
It is not blue.
So it's actually...
I have no idea. I don't think I've ever seen any.
I haven't either. But I mean, I imagine that it's just horrible little crystals. Yeah, cloudy little crystals. 12-year-olds say no to drug dealers. Two 12-year-old boys are being praised.
What were the drug dealers asking?
Do you know the time? No, this is only in Roman numerals. I can't read that kind of time yet. Two 12-year-old boys are being praised for calling to mind the advice of Harold the giraffe when they were offered drugs from strangers on their way to school. Little fucking liars. I think this story is garbage. But anyway, it's also funny.
Good.
Study busts beneficiary myth. A study is blowing the stereotype of sickness beneficiaries who wrought the system out of the water. Massey University has found those with a spinal cord injury who are covered by ACC are more likely to get back to work. But those who don't receive assistance start a downward spiral into poverty.
I'm fairly sure that all studies on any sort of social welfare myth turn up that it's actually a myth every single time.
I think that's pretty much right.
But the problem is we always have anecdote versus statistics, and it's much easier to go with anecdotes because they're, you know, kind of personal.
Well, it's really easy to make up bullshit, and it's really hard to get the facts.
Next story.
Sweden is closing prisons due to lack of prisoners.
We could help.
Five.
Yeah, we could. Oh, I'd love Four. To talk about Toronto Mayor Rob Ford.
Three.
We'll get there because the prison thing I want to carry on for a sec.
Two.
All right. See you after the thing, lovely listeners.
One. You're listening to the weekly show on
With God.
All right, we're using that one.
So about
bloody good that we implemented the strict 1 hour limit.
Yep.
Anyway, the prison thing. Did you see there's an Al Jazeera. I was going to call them Al Qaeda. Oh, too much Fox News for me.
Faux pas.
There's an Al Jazeera special, a half-hour special about New Zealand prisons, specifically the overrepresentation of Māori in New Zealand prisons.
Right.
And the New Zealand criminal system at all levels, actually.
Yeah.
It's interesting. It's tragic. It's sad. And it's it doesn't really offer any answers. It tells us what we know, which is that, you know, there's a lot of poverty in Māori, and there's a lot of multi-generational gang membership, and there's this bit where they're talking to, I think he's like an 11-year-old kid whose dad's like the president of a Munga mob chapter, and it's just like, fuck, you know, how does that kid stand any chance of ever being not in prison, basically?
Yeah.
Well, anyway, it's interesting. Yeah. It's kind of one-sided, you know, but at the same time, it's interesting in what it presents. It's on Al Jazeera somewhere. I'll find it and send you a link.
All right. In other news, Russian artist nails his genitals to Red Square.
What sort of nail did he use?
I don't know. A Russian performance artist nailed his genitals to the ground outside Moscow's Red Square in protest over Russia's police state as the country marked National Police Day. I hope we haven't got one of those here.
Who's going to do that? Who's going to do the nailing? Should we draw straws?
No, I'm not doing that. I like my penis too much. I'm not doing that.
You don't have to nail three penis, just your scrotum.
Oh, yeah, that's true. There was that lad who had gun staple his to wooden boards a lot for as a party trick.
Oh, my God. Where did we see that for the first time?
I think was on Havoc.
Was on Havoc. I think it might have been before that. I think it might have been on like Newsnight or something, though.
Has this got auto-playing video?
Probably. Actually, that reminds me, of course, Gio, we were talking about before. Gio was one of the characters in Umizoomi, but you at home knew that.
Umizoomi!
Umizoomi, Umizoomi.
Is this saying that it's important for me to open? Umizoomi.
It is not something that's important for you to open, but if you have a toddler, you should definitely know about it.
Well, as you know, I do not have a toddler.
No, keep it in mind, should a toddler turn up at some point.
Are you trying to get rid of one of yours?
not currently, he's asleep. But it makes me when he's awake, we might be able to make a deal.
This is the only time he's any good.
Exactly.
So I understand one of yours has gone to school this week.
Yeah, I have two at school now. Now we count down the days until the third one.
Yeah.
Go to school. Actually, kindy is the obviously the next step. You can go to kindy for like 4 days a week or something. That's good enough. But that's not like 9 months. Oh, God.
All right, that's enough about your kids. I can't even believe I pretended to be interested. Judge gives shoplifter another chance.
That's hurtful.
So he must have like accidentally shoplifted once, like some ice blocks or something.
We all went there.
A 47-year-old Blenheim man facing his 76th shoplifting charge has been given another chance. That would be his 77th chance.
Well, yes.
Hamish Peter Andrews. Obviously, he's not famous, so he doesn't have name suppression like Hamish Peter Andrews was convicted and... Oh, I better put a marker on that so I can bleep it out.
So you can beat...
was convicted and ordered to come up for sentencing in Blenheim District Court yesterday after he admitted stealing just about $1,300 of antiques from a Blenheim store.
How the fuck do you shoplift $1,300 worth of antiques?
Really skillfully, apparently.
Antique teaspoons.
Yeah. The store, The antique store is called Sotheby's. It's spelt a lot like Sotheby's, but with a C in it. That is sketchy. I think they should be given another chance and to change their name.
Maybe that's when he got another chance. He was fighting back for the something something Sotheby's trademark.
So apparently he's been to prison before.
You reckon? What did you say? 76?
76 charges.
76 charges previously? Oh, yeah, I'm not surprised he's been to prison.
It would be very easy to send you back to prison. You have a dreadful record of dishonesty, Judge Mills said.
I bet he didn't deliver it like that, though. Maybe.
If you come back to court as you have in the past, you can expect another prison sentence. Tut, tut. Naughty, naughty.
Was there a reason why he didn't? Did he stipulate a reason why he chose not to convict him this time, or chose not to imprison him this time? Is he just going to do it like every other time? I mean, I don't necessarily know. It's just shoplifting. I'm not entirely sure it's vital that he be imprisoned. But I'm curious.
I think it's because he had... All right, so let me read this other thing. He had recently finished a sentence of home detention and had received a very favourable probation report, which said he was progressing positively. And
yes,
I think
while
based
he was
on
stuck
that,
at home, he didn't steal anything.
He hardly stole anything at all while he was stuck at home. You're exactly right. So I think that might be why. Because he only just got out of... I mean, it's not prison, but I guess what? It's not even custody. What do we even call it?
Remand?
I don't even know. What do we call it? Home detention.
Home detention.
Anyway, he had only just been released from that. So, and it's shoplifting. It seems really crappy to jail people for shoplifting. But people just, I mean, how else do you tell them to just don't steal things?
Well, in the same that I mean, chance of 76 convictions for shoplifting, chances are he's, it's not entirely his simple choosing to steal things. There might be something else going on there.
He told police he'd been under financial pressure. That's not sufficient. I mean, all of us feel financial pressure from time to time.
I feel financial pressure all the time. I've never really seen anything worth stealing to make up for it.
So this one time, me and my lady, we went out for dinner. And it was $700. And God, that felt like financial pressure, I tell you what. That was painful. If you eat dishes that include gold, you are gonna be fucking paying for it.
I can't even begin to imagine spending $700 on dinner for two.
It was really good.
I'm pleased to hear it, because if you wouldn't want it to just be like mediocre, you know, like, oh yeah, it was all right, but I mean, I could have gone to Denny's.
Not good enough for $700. It was at Miso Gui in Kyoto, and it was...
Was it like a $470 dinner?
What?
I don't know, I'm just like, it wasn't good enough for $700.
Actually, no, honestly, I think it was only worth about $200.
Right, there you go.
Because it was one of these tasting menu things, degustation thing. And I've had them in New Zealand, which I think I preferred. Don't get me wrong, though, it was absolutely outstanding. But that didn't include matched wines with each course. And for that price, it should have.
At least.
Yeah, and a hand job.
Yeah, matched wines and a happy ending.
Yeah. So, I guess last story.
Probably.
Blockbuster's closed in the US, DVD rental chain, and before that VHS rental chain, and the last movie rented from Blockbuster, This Is the End.
Wait, rented, not returned?
Oh God, how would he return it to the closed store?
Like, how does that work?
They probably just let him keep it. I mean, what do they care? They've lost their jobs.
I watched This at the End of the Day. It's quite funny.
I haven't seen it.
Didn't rent it from Blockbuster.
I've actually been watching a little bit of Netflix.
Oh, yeah?
A little bit. Not much. I watched some documentaries because on Letterboxd, the wonderful film watcher, film fan social network, as created by a team of New Zealanders. It is an excellent site, Letterboxd.
Does it have, I haven't been there for a while, does it have links into things like Netflix yet?
It actually does. You can enter your Netflix credentials, and then you can, depending on, I guess, the configuration of that particular TV film, there are no TV shows on Letterboxd, that film or documentary, You can either add it directly into your
watch later queue,
your watch later queue, or you just can go and look at the view the information page.
Cool.
And anyway, there's a list of documentaries that a friend of mine put together of docos that he hadn't seen that were suggested to him on Twitter. And so I've been watching some of those, including a movie that I can't believe I'd never watched before, called, what is that? Jiro Dreams of Sushi or something?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Right. TV's Ben Grace was just talking about that some time ago. And I see it occasionally when I'm browsing through the old Netflix list, I see it there and I'm like, I wonder if I should, whatever.
Yeah. So it's that's really nice. I also, though, watched another documentary called something like How Much Does Your Building Weigh, Mr. Foster or something?
Right.
And it's about an architect who's made a bunch of pretty nice-looking buildings, and including, I think, the Gherkin in London and various other, you know, quite nice-looking buildings. But it's a really shit documentary.
All right, well, I'll just have it tell you quickly. I'm just looking at my Netflix now.
Yeah.
Oh, God, it's sad. My Netflix, things it's recommending for me at the moment that are popular on Netflix. Curious George, the TV series.
Yeah.
Daniel Tiger's Neighborhood. Super Y, The Magic School Bus, Caillou, The Adventures of Chuck and Friends, Handy Manny, Sesame Street, Color Crew,
so, Mighty so Machines, just, so My one Little second. Ponies. One second, Dylan. Are you 4 years old?
I'm not, but I suspect that some of the other people who use my Netflix account may be 5 years old and 8 years old.
But can't you set up different profiles? I'm sure old. That when I
can,
logged
I can
in.
Set up different profiles, but my Roku does not support different profiles, which means it uses the default profile, which also happens to be my profile. What I should do is create a new profile for myself. Except I use the Roku as well, and so regardless, it still doesn't support mixed profiles, which means I wouldn't be able to see my list on there. Walking Dead is in there amongst all these kids' TV shows.
Oh, Walking Dead.
Yeah, so I mean, obviously, I want to make sure they don't pick that one. Totoro. Yeah. There's so many kids' TV shows on Netflix. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Fantastic. It's so fantastic.
Yeah, there's lots of great stuff. We've got a whole category here. It says I should be interested in feel-good talking animal TV cartoons, which includes My Little Ponies and Busy Town Mystery. I should also like family-friendly Canadian TV shows such as Babar and stuff.
Yeah,
Paddington Bear, apparently.
So I also watched Bones Brigade, which is, you know, obviously it's a skateboard documentary. That was very good. And the one that I'm really looking forward to right now is Senna.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I've seen that. It keeps popping up on my recommended list amongst those kids' shows as well.
Yeah.
And for some reason at the moment, it's recommending heist movies to me.
I love a good heist movie.
But I do like a good heist movie. I watched The Town the other day. I was very satisfied with that.
We're going to put this whole town in our rear view. I can't do a Boston accent.
No, I'm not even going to try. I've clearly proven to myself many times that I can't.
I think you should give it a shot.
No.
Give it a shot.
Car. Park my car in Harvard Yard.
All right, well, that was better than mine, obviously. But, yeah, I mean, I see what you're saying.
I could do car.
Car. Car.
And lobster. No, I can't even do lobster.
That starts to sound a little bit New York.
That's the problem.
I don't think that I can differentiate between the two. So there are a lot of lists on Letterboxd. You should go and if you're not on Letterboxd,
I have a Letterboxd account. I just haven't logged in for ages, and every now and again I get an email saying, "Hey, such and such has friended you on Letterboxd."
I'm actually literally talking to you, but I was speaking to our listeners right then.
I know you're literally talking to me, and I'm
Letterboxd with no e. Well, with two e's, not a third e. letterboxd.com. You should go and sign up. It's really cool. And once you have your friends on there, you can see their lists of their favorite things. Now, it might just be poster art that they like. It might be horror movies or zombie movies or, in fact, their favorite documentaries. And if you have Netflix, you can probably watch a whole lot of them online, just, you know, sitting on your couch without having to go to Blockbuster, which is lucky because, well, number one, do we have Blockbuster in New Zealand?
I'm pretty sure New Zealand Blockbuster is...
Is it separate?
Has it gone? The Blockbuster down the road from me is gone.
Yeah.
But it's all Blockbuster gone. Who knows? I won a voucher at a pub quiz for Civic Video, which I gave away because, frankly, there's no freaking way I'm hiring anything from Civic Video.
Yeah. So I've just found a list called Letterboxd in Auckland, which is movies shot in whole or in part right here in Orcs. And it includes Evil Dead, which we paid a whole bunch of money to make here. And it doesn't even mention New Zealand even once.
When you were saying Letterboxd without the E, it reminded me of this hilarious thing that I noticed the other day, which is sometimes when people tell you how to spell a word, but like they tell you a letter that's different for spelling a word, but a word that you might not otherwise know how to spell. You know, like I might say, you know, it's flamurgle, but with an H.
Yeah.
Yeah. Someone told me to visit. Someone told me they like these trivia things on Sporkle, but with a C. And I was like, what?
S-P-O-R-C-L-E. It's obvious.
Well, it is S-P-O-R-C-L-E, but I thought it was pretty amusing. Sporkle with a C. You know, because normally you'd spell Sporkle with a K, because it's an imaginary made-up word.
But you know what spork is, and you know what the suffix "-ul-" is spelled like.
So anyway, Sporkle is apparently a quiz website with quizzes and stuff. I don't know. I've never been there.
Don't tell me any more about it. I don't like the sound of that.
Quizzes?
Yeah.
All right, fine.
Not on the internet.
Oh, you know the other thing that's on Netflix?
Yes.
Along with documentaries? Well, there's lots of other things on Netflix. But things that I've been checking out occasionally on Netflix include stand-up comedy specials. There's quite a lot of them. And I think Aziz Ansari's latest one is exclusive to Netflix.
Yeah. Golly. So he's not going the charge $5 route that all the other comedians are doing?
No.
No? The Louis C.K. model?
Well, is it all the other comedians or just Louis C.K.?
The clever ones seem to have followed suit. None of them have done quite as well out of it as Louis, but yeah. So while we're talking about movies, I don't think we've ever spoken about the Bechdel test. And it is interesting because it's something that will make you think about something you probably have never thought about. Well, especially if you're a boy, you will never have thought about it. The Bechdel test is basically if there are two women in a movie and they have a conversation with each other, and they don't talk about a man. That passes the Bechdel test. And you'll find that very few movies actually pass the Bechdel test. And apparently Swedish movie theatres have just started adding a Bechdel test rating to films in that country. And that's brilliant. And I think we should do the same thing here. Oh, and one other thing! While I'm dragging this show on forever... Unfortunately, I've got to go and look at my Twitter and find a retweet that I sent today. So this is this is another Swedish thing. This is a Swedish Toys R Us catalog that has. So they've got like a dinosaur castle, and there's a boy and a girl playing with them, and then they've got a very pink plastic kitchen thing with a cash register on it, and they've got a girl and a boy playing with them, and then they've got a baby dolly. And they have a boy and a girl playing with them. And then they've got Barbies, and they have a boy and a girl playing with them. And every single toy, no matter how gender programmed you would associate it with, has both a boy and a girl playing with them. And it is just fucking brilliant. And this is another thing we need to steal from Sweden.
That is cool. And of course, have you ever watched a boy and a girl playing with toys? They really don't give a shit about the color of the toys.
Right.
All the, you know, things.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's good. He's good. It makes a lot of sense. And having children, I realize they don't really give many shits about the supposed gender differences of a given toy.
Yeah. All right. Anyway, fish and chips, fish and chips, fish and chips.
Fish and chips, fish and chips.
This show is cancelled. Beep.